Straight up here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is after hours here on The Fan. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Another game, another era for George Lombard Jr. I said it last night. I'll say it again. I think it's a bump in the road. I think it's a mental thing. I don't think it's something that's going to follow Lombard around for the rest of the year or even his career. I do think he is a great defensive player. That is his calling card. But right now, it's just one of those things. It's a speed bump. It's something he's going through. And I think this is where Aaron Boone needs to step in as the manager of the team and say, you know what? Let's give Lombard a day off. Let's give him a day off. We got a huge series coming up against the Red Sox. The last thing you want is for Lombard to boot another ball, to commit another error, and add more fuel to the fire of this conversation that is going on about Lombard. Because it is heating up, heating up, heating up. And with a big one coming up against the Red Sox, the last thing you want is a carryover effect into that series. So I think the best thing to do, the prudent thing to do, would be to keep Lombard out of the lineup tonight against the Astros and have him ready to go, give him a little mental reset. He can't commit an error from the dugout. At least, I mean, I don't think he can. I mean, that would be unprecedented. I suppose a ball could be hit into the dugout and he could boot it, and then they would charge him for an error. But to me, giving Lombard a rest, a little relaxation, get his mind right, because, look, he's a young player. He's human. You start to pile up these errors, these mistakes, and it could start to become out of control. And look, we know how New York fans are. We know how the media is. We know how just the world we live in with the social media. He could start getting booed. And the last thing you want is for a player with this talent, you know, the number one prospect in your organization and a guy that bursted on the scene. And look, the Yankees have kind of taken off since he's been called up. But the last thing you want is for it to start to get a little bit on the ugly side. So nip it in the bud. Don't let it go any further. Don't let it snowball. Keep Lombard out of the game later on tonight. The Yankees are going to win it anyway. I mean, Houston stinks. And get Lombard ready for what is a very critical series against Boston, because the Red Sox have righted the ship. You know, after being awful, they got hot, then they were awful again. Now they are playing really good baseball. They themselves have many reinforcements on the way, including Roman Anthony, including IKF, including Trevor Story. So the Red Sox are only getting stronger and stronger and stronger here. That's why I think they are going to finish ahead of Tampa, in addition to the Yankees finishing ahead of Tampa. I told you that a couple weeks ago. The Rays are not going to run and hide in this division. I think they're good. I don't think they're very good. They're certainly not great. And they weren't going to be a team that, when we were sitting here at the end of September, that would have a healthy lead that would be, in theory, insurmountable for anybody to catch up to them. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It's after hours. It's Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. Let's go to Ben in Passaic. He kicks off the midnight hour. Ben, what's going on?
I wanted to discuss the postseason coming up for the Yankees. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, are they going to put Rice at catcher and let Spencer Jones sit in right field and then DH Judge?
Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, the Judge DH thing will be interesting because he's obviously coming off a major injury, so we're going to find out quickly if he's going to be able to play right field night in and night out. Ben, look, it's been a topic since the offseason, Ben Rice, a catcher. The Yankees are not going to do it. They're certainly not going to do it in October.
He's batting very well.
What's that?
Even if Jones continues batting well.
Yeah, look, it's a tough problem to have, and I think Jones deserves some playing time. Maybe you give Grisham a little bit less playing time, and I know Wells has been awful, but he knows the pitchers. They have a rapport. Defensively, he's really good. I just don't think they're going to thrust Ben Rice back there. They're not going to want to have a liability defensively. They're not going to play Ben Rice in the field, basically. That's the moral of the story.
Even Ramos. What about Hilly Ramos? I haven't heard of him since he got to the
Well, because he stinks. That's why. He's not good. He can't field. He can't hit right-handed pitching. He was basically, I think, brought in here a little bit as insurance. I think he's the odd man out. He's not going to factor in, I think, to any kind of plans going forward.
Another idea. What about Chisholm?
What about him?
Isn't Garcia, doesn't he play second base?
Yeah, well, he's already there.
So who played? And Rice plays first. So
listen, Ben Rice is not playing a position. Ben Rice will not be holding a glove in his hand. Ben Rice cannot field. So he does not have a position. Maybe he'll learn one down the line. Ben Rice has got a DH. Now, if Judge has a DH, that's going
to
be...
Jones will go to first base.
Yeah, I mean, listen, Garcia's your first baseman, though. Garcia's been playing great, and not only offensively, but defensively. Well, Ben, what is the purpose of this call other than to... I'm not sure what you're trying to do here. You're trying to reinvent the wheel? I mean, the lineup's going to be what the lineup's going to be, but I feel like you're trying to put square peg into round holes here. Like, what is the overall thing that you're trying to get to here? You're trying to find Ben Rice a position?
No, I was trying to wonder if Jones is going to continue playing when he got to the postseason.
Yeah, I think that's where Grisham could lose a little bit of time. I mean, Trent Grisham is having what I would say is a very so-so year, and that's being kind. He can't move out in the outfield. I pitched the idea and liked the idea of Spencer Jones playing instead of Trent Grisham.
Right. Okay, thank you so much.
No, you got it so much. Spencer Jones fan there. Yeah, I mean, look, I think Spencer Jones should get more playing time, and he's been great in his second sort of term with the Yankees here. Like, the first go-round, not good, especially offensively. Like, defensively, athletic-wise, you could see that Spencer Jones, I mean, he's such a tall dude, much like an Aaron Judge, but then you watch him play baseball, and you say, boy, he's got a lot of athleticism. Boy, he could really get after it in the outfield. Garcia's your first baseman. Ben Rice has to DH. He cannot field. So you're certainly not putting him behind the plate. If you were going to do that, you should have done that earlier in the season, especially with the struggles of Austin Wells. You are too far down the path now to make any type of changes like that at the catcher position. And listen, you brought up an interesting thing with Judge. In theory, he's going to be able to play the field coming off this injury, in theory. But that's just theory. If Judge has to DH, then you got problems. And by that, I mean, I don't know what the heck you're doing with Ben Rice. I really don't. I'm not moving Garcia to second base. I'm telling you, I know he's been good at first base. He's not good at second base. So this idea of, well, maybe you could move Rice to first, you could put Garcia at second, you could put Jazz at third, or I just don't see any of that happening. Like, in all likelihood, Judge is going to be able to play the field. He's going to be able to be out and right. You keep Bellinger in left, and you could sort of platoon, so to speak, Grisham and Jones in center. And then you're keeping Jazz at second. Lombard is only going to need a little bit of a day. Like I said, I would give him the day off today, but ultimately he's your shortstop. And Garcia, I think, is completely and utterly sort of engulfed himself as not only the first baseman for the rest of this year in October, but also next year, and who knows beyond that. Luis Garcia Jr. was such a steal for the Yankees. I mean, they gave up virtually nothing, and he is a guy that is fully blossoming, coming into his own, perfect for that stadium, perfect for this lineup, just perfect. And I know Brian Cashman has his detractors, and he has people that come after him on a daily basis, and he's certainly not perfect, far from it. But, I mean, you got to give him a ton of credit for that Garcia trade. Ton of credit. Garcia's a real player and has been a huge addition to this team. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Anthony joins us next from Flushing. What's up, Tony?
Hey, what's going on, Tommy? Hey. First time, long time.
Thank you.
I just wanted to get you on the phone and ask you, I hear a lot of people always bashing Jazz, and I do agree he does do a lot of questionable things, but I just don't understand, like, it's not like the stacked MLB second baseman that I grew up with like, you know, Kinsler and Pedroia,
right?
Cano, you know. So if you really want to drop him, I mean, what is the net Yankees option? I mean, is it Volpe? I really don't know if I could look and see him for another couple of years. I mean, I know Garcia can potentially move to second, but I just wanted your take on that. And I also, what do you think about third base, like, realistically going forward? Because I can't look at this left side of the infield anymore, but appreciate you, Tommy.
Yeah.
I'll listen to what you got to say.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony. Jazz, look, I think Jazz is quirky in some ways, and I think that quirkiness sometimes irritates people. Look, I defended him with the lollipop stuff. I didn't think it was a huge deal. A lot of people, including Aaron Boone, made it into a big deal. I didn't think it was a big deal at all. There's just some things in the way that Jazz maybe carries himself that rubs people the wrong way, but I look at more of his production, and it's been down this year, and I think that has a lot to do with the pressure of a contract season. I am on the side of I don't think Jazz Chisholm, barring a huge run in October, Yankees win a World Series and they bring him back because of that. I think Jazz's days are numbered with the Yankees. And cover your ears, but I do think their first option is going to be trying Anthony Volpe at second base. I'm just telling you. Put a pin in that one. They're gonna, well, Volpe's got the arm for a second baseman. You know, he wanted to learn the position. You know the deal. I wish we've seen the last of Anthony Volpe in some ways, just because for him, too. I think he needs to go somewhere else and get his career going in another location. Like, I would have dropped him. I would have said his career is done. But I do think the Yankees are going to ultimately try to make him into a second baseman. Third base, obviously, McMahon off the books. You're going to have to find somebody. Maybe you bring in Luis Arraez, who's going to be a free agent in the offseason. But I think Jazz's time is up. I think Garcia will be the first baseman next year. I think Rice will be the DH. And then ultimately, this is where Rice has got to learn a position, because I think you're going to have to be on board with this. And that is the fact that Aaron Judge is ultimately going to be the DH of this team somewhere down the line. They are not going to continue to put him out in the outfield. It's just too risky. It's just too risky. He's already crossing over to 35 years old, and the last thing you want is Aaron Judge out there diving around, running into walls, and injuring himself. So you're going to want to DH him, maybe even a little bit of time at first base. So Ben Rice at some point is going to have to figure out something somewhere, positional-wise. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Mike joins us from Westchester. What's up, Mike?
Tommy, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, what's going on?
Not much. I just wanted to let you know, I always enjoy getting in my car after work at midnight and hearing you on the radio. It's always entertaining, and I appreciate the 15 minutes you give me in between work and home.
Appreciate you. What do you got going on there when you get out of work at midnight? What job do you have?
I'm in law enforcement.
Thank you. Appreciate all the work you do.
No problem. Thoroughly entertaining, and you got big things coming in your future.
Well, I appreciate that, Mike, and I appreciate like it's anything that I could do to entertain the audience here, whether it's for 15 minutes here in the car, whether you're like Hector in the Bronx, who calls us all the time, who drives trucks with his wife, and they're going cross country, and they're probably listening to me for more than 15 minutes. If I can help your commute go faster, or I get a laugh out of you, that's why I'm here. So, and I wouldn't be here without you. So I appreciate all the kind words. Let's head out to Jack in Flanders, New Jersey. He joins us next. What's up, Jack?
Hey, Tommy. I just have two quick questions, one for the Yankees and then one quickly for the Giants. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to ask the questions and then I'll get off and just listen to the answers. The first one for the Yankees, I think Spencer Jones absolutely deserves at-bats, especially coming up into the playoffs. And I was just wondering, what about the possibility of moving Cody Bellinger over to first base every now and then for a couple games? And then moving Spencer Jones over to that corner outfield spot? And what do you think? Maybe they could do that in like certain playoff games or playoff situations? Because then you get both the at-bats. And then you can move Luis Garcia. I know you say you don't want him at second base, but you can move him over to second, and then Jazz goes to the bench.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to play Garcia against a lefty, but would you want to play Spencer Jones against a lefty? Because Garcia, look, I don't want to sit him at all, ideally. I mean, I know he's not good against left-handed pitching, and if you're facing, let's say, Garrett Crochet, I mean, good luck, but that good luck to the righties, too, trying to hit him. But yeah, you're going to have
a
situation.
He's a must-have at that.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're running into here, but based on your questions, Jack, and a question from a previous caller, is that once Judge returns, you're going to have a little bit of a log jam at times, and the key here is how do you find everybody playing time down the stretch and in the postseason?
Yeah, absolutely. And then one quickly thing about the Giants. Listen, man, I really respect your opinion for the Giants. I think you're one of the best, if not the best, when it comes to looking at the Giants as a Giants fan and not like overhyping them or anything. So I want to get your opinion this year for the Giants secondary.
Mm-hmm.
It's honestly one thing that I think people are overlooking the absolute most. I think this secondary has a very big boomer bust potential. Guys like Javon Holland, Deontay Banks, Greg Newsome, Drew Phillips, Tyler Newbin. I think all of them are trying to prove it this year that they can still be productive in this league. And I genuinely think that they have the potential to be a top 10 secondary in this league. And pairing that with this front seven, I just want to know if this secondary booms, what you think this Giants defensive potential is.
Oh, you should hang up.
Thank you very much for your time.
I appreciate it, Jack. If what you said comes to fruition, the Giants are going to have one of the best defenses in the NFL. Because I am very nervous about the secondary. Very nervous about it. And that's why I was banging the drum for them to draft Caleb Downs. I wanted him in the worst way. I think they need a leader back there. I think they need somebody to help them stop the run in the secondary. They need a playmaker like Caleb Downs. I wanted him in the worst way, and it made it even much more of a sting to me that he went to the Cowboys. Now, I'm not going to argue with Maui Noah because he's an offensive lineman. You're trying to protect your quarterback. You're trying to establish a running attack. And I understand that, doing that in the top 10. But to me, Caleb Downs would have fit a major and filled a major void and fit a major need. I don't think the secondary is going to be good. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think it's going to be very good. I think if there's going to be a unit on the Giants defense that takes a major leap, it's going to be linebacker. I pause a little bit on the hype of Arvell Reese because we heard everything about Abdul Carter last year, and Carter had a disappointing rookie season both on and off the field, and he's certainly got a lot to prove in year two. If he has another bad year, I think you're going to start hearing people call him a bust. Arvell Reese has been everything you read, everything you see on social media or you hear from a beat reporter is that Arvell Reese has been absolutely unbelievable this summer, which you got to take it with slight grain of salt only because it's training camp and preseason. He comes with a ton of hype and a ton of potential, but until you see it in game action, but if Arvell Reese can turn into the player we're seeing in the summer, then he is going to be a major addition to that linebacking core. McFadden coming back from an injury, Tremaine Edmonds, who is one of the best linebackers in the NFL over the last couple of years. That was a much under the radar, even overlooked as we talk about the Giants defense and this Giants team throughout the summer. So if there's going to be a unit on the field that I think takes that next step, it's going to be the linebacking group. This defensive line better be good, and I can't stress that enough. They better be good. There's enough talent on that side, and I know Lawrence is gone, but the Dexter Lawrence we saw last year was, yes, double teams, but still, I think, in many ways, mentally checked out and wanted to either get paid or be somewhere else, which ultimately ended up being, you know, shipped out of here to Cincinnati. I hope the secondary is good. I'm not optimistic about it. I'm not. Now, there are certainly ways around a bad secondary. Pass rush, a great running game on the other side of the ball, keeping this defense off the field. Like the two things I go into this season, the two things I'm worried about the most, and neither one of them are on the offensive side of the ball. Neither one. I know some people might be like, well, what about the wide receiver room? I'm not worried about the wide receivers at all. Not worried about the running backs. I think this offensive line for the Giants is going to build off of what it was last year, which was one of the best offensive lines they've had in a decade. Jackson Dart, I think all the stuff with the, it's a witch hunt with the blue medical tent. He had one concussion last year. He didn't have 17 of them, but they treat him like he does or did. So I'm not worried about Dart as far as his health. I think he will only get better in year two. Look, there have been, again, though, it is, take whatever you hear in training camp and whatever you see in preseason with a massive grain of salt. Massive. This idea that Dart is struggling or this, that, and the other, it's like, yeah, perhaps maybe that's what the Giants want you to think. Maybe they want the Cowboys to think that, or they want the league to think that. And let's just go with the fact that he, for the sake of the conversation, that Dart is struggling this summer. Well, geez, I mean, the guy's in his second year. He's got a new offensive coordinator. He's got a new head coach. He's got a new system. So I would think there would be a little bit of growing pains. But I think once we get to week one, as far as the athleticism, as far as the energy, as far as the skill set, as far as the, hey, he didn't turn the ball over a lot last year, Dart, with Scataboo back, with Neighbors back. I mean, Jackson Dart basically did not play with Malik Neighbors last year. And he's going to get that opportunity right out of the gate because John Harbaugh all but confirmed it this week that Neighbors is going to be ready to go for the Cowboys. So the two things I'm most worried about are the secondary and the Giants' inability to stop the run. Those will keep me up at night, especially the inability to stop the run, because if you're going to get run all over, you're going to have big problems. So they got to, I know they beefed up the line. They put some big bodies in there. Hope for the best, because it has been a problem for years. But like I said, I think the linebacking core is the one unit I would expect to take a major leap here. And the two things that scare me defensively for the Giants are the inability to stop the run and the secondary. Because there's a lot of ifs. Well, if this guy, if that guy, if this guy, too many. And there's, when you start bringing up Tay Banks' name, you know what I mean? Like, it's nothing against anybody that brings it up. I know a previous caller did. I get it. Like, he's part of the team. But Javon Holland was a disappointment last year. That secondary, and they put a lot of money in there, into that part of the team last year, and it didn't pan out. And obviously, they drafted Colton Hood. So we'll see how it pans out. But my optimism for the team is there, but for the secondary, it is not there. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Pete joins us next from Woodbury here on After Hours. What's up, Pete? Hey, Pete, you there?
Hey, Tommy.
Hey,
I'm with the, I'm with my son, my 7-year-old son, coming home from the Yankee game, and he just wants to ask you a quick question.
Awesome. What's your son's name?
Pete.
So he's a junior. So you're both named Pete. Gotcha. Okay. And Pete's there now?
Yep. Yes, he is.
Well, Pete, let me ask you. Hold on. Before you ask me a question, Pete, let me ask you a question. What grade are you going into here? Because school started, right?
Starting.
Yeah. And what do you got? What do you, 7? What would that be, like, 2nd grade? My math is correct there?
Actually, 3rd.
3rd grade. What's your favorite subject in school?
Math.
Math? Nice. Yeah, that was my least favorite, so we're polar opposites on that point. Okay, so you're back in school. You just went to the game with your dad. Awesome. You have a question about George Lombard Jr. for me.
Yeah.
So, since he made a couple of, like, a couple of hours, when he's only playing 15 games this season, I wonder if we should have traded him for Mason Miller. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah.
What do you think, Tommy?
Yeah, and I appreciate the call, guys, and good luck with school. The Padres were never trading Mason Miller. They were never moving off him. So that was never happening. That being said, if you could have acquired Mason Miller, I mean, yeah. I mean, you're talking about a guy that is the best closer in baseball, under a ton of team control, totally. And I know the bullpen is amazing, but we saw this one now with Cruz out. I mean, imagine Bednar in the 8th inning with Miller closing out the 9th inning. I mean, that would be an unstoppable bullpen. But what I would, the only pushback I would have for you, Pete, is I am not necessarily, I'm saying that more to acquire Miller. Yeah, you got to give up your top prospect. Makes total sense, especially because Miller's under team control for a while. And San Diego wasn't in a position where they should be selling off players. And they ultimately didn't. I am not selling shares or stock of Lombard based on his recent performance. I think it's a little bit mental at this point. That's why I have said they should give him a day off. I would not play Lombard in the final game of the series against Houston. I don't want it snowballing going into the Red Sox series. I don't want a situation where potentially he could get booed. The conversation that is surrounding Lombard, whether it's right here on WFAN or on social media or at Yankee Stadium or in your local bar or local office, is now becoming, boy, is this guy another Anthony Volpe? Should we have kept Anthony Volpe there? Was Lombard overhyped? Is it another prince that was promised, and ultimately Lombard is not going to be the goods? He's not going to deliver on that promise. That's why I would give him a day off. I think it's the best thing that Aaron Boone can do for this young player is to take a seat, rest up, mentally especially. He can't make an error from the dugout. Because one more error here going to this Red Sox series, and I think you start to look at a guy that's confidence is going to be shot. So you'd be playing with fire putting him out there. I think it's the time. Like, it just feels like the time to give him a little bit of a day off here. Look, he bursted on the scene, and sometimes that could be a curse. Like, when you have the first ball that was hit to him, he made a tremendous defensive play. He hit a home run. Now, and I said this the night he came up, what Lombard had going for him, besides the fact that he had a tremendous debut, what he had going for him is his name is not Anthony Volpe. And Anthony Volpe became public enemy number one. And it's a lot easier to replace a player that the majority of the fan base, or certainly a good portion of it, maybe not the majority, but, you know, even if it's the minority, the loud minority of the fans, you are replacing that guy, it's just, it's easier. You know, replacing a legend, difficult. Replacing a guy that everybody basically was sick of, and the Yankees shoved down everyone's throat, that's easy. That's easy to replace that guy. Especially when you come out and perform the way that Lombard Jr. did in his debut as a Yankee. But much like every rookie, you go through growing pains. You go through ups and downs. And Lombard is going through that right now. Doesn't mean he is not going to ultimately be that prince that was promised. But yeah, if you could have gotten Mason Miller, yeah, you're going to have to give up Lombard, so I would have done it. But I'm not going to say that Lombard is a bust and is overhyped based on a couple of games and what I think is more of a bump in the road and a mental thing. Like, you saw it early on with his defense. This guy can flat out play that position. What is going on right now is unexplainable. Look, Francisco Lindor, a guy that is one of the best players at his position of his generation. Look at the season he had with the error. It happens. Sometimes it just happens. And we can't tell you how many people I took calls from or saw or stuff. Oh, they got to trade Lindor. Really? I'm glad you're not running the team. And we're talking about a vet, a guy who's an all-star, could have been an MVP a couple years ago, has played in a ton of big games, and he was making errors and mistakes that just were unexplainable. Sometimes baseball is just unexplainable. It happens. And what you do as a manager is try to give that player as much support and help that you can give him. And one of the ways that you can help out a situation is to rest them. Like when Lindor was having those mental gaffes early in the year, I remember Evan coming out and saying this was an opportunity for Mendy to bench Lindor, to not only sort of send a message to Francisco, but to the rest of the team. Hey, if I can bench him, I can bench anybody. Now, I don't think Aaron Boone would be benching Lombard. I'm not suggesting benching him, but just give him a day off. Just give him a day off. I think it would be the best thing for him. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. Lugie in the late night here on The Fan. Let's go to Chris in Forked River. He joins us next. What's up, Chris?
Hey, how's it going, Tommy? How you doing tonight?
Good. How you doing?
Doing all right. So I happen to agree with you giving Lombard the day off tomorrow. Let him reset. But my buddies and I are having a little bit of a debate. They're saying they think it's going to hurt his confidence more, give him that day off tomorrow, instead of just rolling him out since he's only been up 19 games. Just wanted to see what you thought about that.
Yeah, listen, I appreciate the call. That's the other side of the coin here. To me, it's a valuable lesson early on in your big league career that sometimes you can get enough smoke blown up your ass that you think, and I don't think Lombard is wired this way. He obviously comes from a tremendous upbringing. His dad played in the league, is a coach in the league. The interview that night from both mom and dad, very impressive. So he obviously was raised the right way. He's a leader and he's the goods, but baseball will humble you. And sometimes this is a situation where you expect to be in the lineup every day, but you know what? You're not going to be in the lineup today. You need a day off. Nobody is above that, especially somebody that just stepped foot out here. So if that breaks his confidence and hurts him, well, then you start to think, okay, is this guy really is the goods? Because you're playing in New York, you're playing for the Yankees. If that shakes you, well, you're going to be shown a lot in your tenure. Like, every Yankee has been booed. You're going to get booed. People are going to say nasty things about you on the radio. People are going to say nasty things about you at the game. People are saying nasty things about you on social media. It's part of the job. Heck, that's part of my job. I mean, people say mean things about me all the time. And then they'll say nice things about me. So it's part of being in the public eye. Now, I'm not the shortstop for the Yankees, so, but still, you know, I kind of lived through that a little bit. And I'm sure there's people in the audience that thinks upper management should give me a day off every once in a while. But I do think it's the best for Lombard. And if he can't handle that, and if that sort of messes him up, well, then we need to reevaluate Lombard as a player, because this is a very tough town. And if you can't handle getting a day off, then boy, you're not going to be able to handle what's coming your way, which is a lot. A lot. Especially with this fan base who is starving for a championship. Playing that position that you're playing, we saw what they did to Anthony Volpe. They ate him up alive. So I think you give Lombard the day off, and it's up to him to take that as a, hey, I need this ultimately. And that's where Boone can, and I think Boone is good at stuff like this, explain to Lombard why they're doing it and why it's the best thing for him. So I think ultimately it would be more of a positive, because if you put him out there and he commits another error, boy, it's just going to continue to snowball, and now you have him just in many ways mentally lacking in confidence going into a Red Sox series where the last thing you want is players out there that are lacking in confidence. Because the Red Sox walk into this place with a ton of confidence. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. We'll continue to take your calls on the Yankees. We'll mix some stuff with the Mets into the conversation, including a name that has emerged as a possible general manager that could be hired in the offseason. We will get into more of the Giants as well. If you're online now and you want to talk Giants, stay on. We'll get to the Jets, of course, as well at 888-808-1019. So a lot of topics to cover in the final 90 minutes here on After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan. 1237 here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. It is After Hours. Here on The Fan, you know, A.J. Ewing, 20 stolen bases, the fourth rookie in franchise history with 20 stolen bases. And look, Carson Bench is having the better rookie campaign, and I think he has put himself in the conversation for NL Rookie of the Year. Same thing with Nolan McClain. But A.J. Ewing, he's going through a little bit offensively, but, I mean, defensively, another great catch tonight at the wall, all these stolen bases. It's just, it's impossible not to be excited and optimistic about this outfield. Soto, we know the brilliance, we know the generational talent that he is, and it sounds like Soto's going to be back by September 1st, so only a couple days from now, and the Mets are playing, and I understand they took it on the chin tonight, but they've been playing really, really good baseball ever since the trade deadline. Benj has just been on a tear. Ewing, like I said, with the stolen bases, the defense. Benj, obviously great defensively too, and now you get, in theory, Soto back in a couple of days, and it puts the Mets in a position to have a strong end of the season, which, look, they got some big ones coming up. We know there's going to be a lot of hype, a lot of talk, a lot of discourse around Pete Alonso's return to Citi Field. You still have the Subway Series, the final round of the Subway Series in 2026, which will be at Yankee Stadium, September 11th weekend, which is also opening weekend for the NFL, Giants Sunday Night Football against the Cowboys, and, of course, the Jets in Nashville, in Tennessee, to take on a familiar face in Robert Saleh and the upstart Titans. The upstart Titans, a team that has a lot of hype surrounding them. You know, the Titans are kind of in that same category as the Giants of a sleeper team or a team that people think are going to take a leap. And obviously for similar reasons, at least as far as quarterback, Cam Ward, who was the number one overall pick and played a lot better down the stretch, and he wasn't working with much last year as far as talent, which you often are when you're the number one overall pick, because it means the team stunk when they drafted you. That's why they had the number one overall pick. But they spent a ton of money, the Titans did, in the offseason. They obviously made a million coaching changes, including Saleh, including bringing in Brian Daboll. And we'll see if they're able to put all of that together for week one. But it's going to be, you know, either way, it's going to be one of those situations where it's the Jets have to win that game. I know it's crazy to put a have to or a must win on a week one game, but if all the optimists, optimistic people, all the people that are feeling really good about the Jets, all the people that are banging the drum for 6 wins, 7 wins, 8 wins for the Jets, if you are in that camp, then they got to win the first game. Because if they lose that game, they could be staring at 0-4. And if they're staring at 0-4, you're going to get a coaching change. You might even get a quarterback change. And then all of a sudden, the end of the year rolls around and you got 3 or 4 wins. And not 7 or 8. I mean, that first game is so imperative, because now if you win that game, you get one on the board, little momentum going into week 2 home game. They're doing a whiteout against the Packers. Packers could always be an up-and-down team. You never know what you're going to get out of Love. Like, some Sundays he looks great. Other Sundays he looks awful. So maybe you look up and you're 2-0. And then all of a sudden you can start to buy into it if you're someone like me who's pessimistic about the Jets. Like, I think they're a 3 or 4-win team. And I know, oh, well, what about, you're positive, Tommy. Why aren't you positive with the Jets? Well, I could be positive with the Jets. Not this year, but in the future. But I just don't see where the optimism is coming from with this team. Like I said, it could get ugly and get ugly quick, especially if they don't win that first game. And the funny thing is if I say this, and I've said it a lot on the radio, those that are optimistic about the Jets, their pushback and their anger towards me saying that, they will be in my camp and on the same boat as I am if the Jets lose week 1. And you see Bobby Saleh out there pumping his fist. Geno Smith maybe has a bad game, throws a couple of interceptions. Aaron Glenn once again looks confused and looks overmatched as a head coach. If that happens in week 1 and the Jets lose, I'm telling you right now, everybody will be calling up and apologizing to me, saying, Tommy, you're right, this team stinks. They're going to lose the next 3 games and Glenn's going to be out of here. You know it, too. Like, all the optimism that exists with this team will be gone after a week if they lose. Gone. So, yeah, it's a must-win. It's a must-win for perception. It's a must-win for momentum. It's a must-win for... Aaron Glenn has got to see some wins as a head coach. They lose that first one. Not going to be easy in week 2. Definitely not going to be easy week 3 and 4. You're going on the road, Chicago and Detroit. That is a tough 4 games there. The easiest game for you is week 1. The easiest. You're getting a team of the Titans who might not even be good, and if they end up being good, they certainly are probably not going to be good right out of the gate. As they're all a young quarterback, now learning his second system, and I think ultimately, like, with Dable there, Cam Ward's going to be great. I think the Titans are going to be actually really, really good. Maybe not this year, but in time. But I don't know about week 1. So you're catching them at a good time. And like I said, the Jets need that game. Otherwise, everything that I've laid out for this football team is going to come to fruition. Glenn will be gone by week 6. You could see a quarterback change by week 7 or 8. You got to see what you got with Klubnik, who I don't think is very good. But you at least have to see what you got with him. You know what Geno Smith can do on a football field. And you know that Geno Smith could be a part of this organization for years to come. He could be a backup here and a good backup. Similar to a Jameis Winston. You got to find out what's going on with Klubnik, because he could be your quarterback of the future. If he is, great. Then you have all these picks in the first round, and you have accumulated all these picks, and you could use that on building around Klubnik. But you have to see if he can sink or swim. It is a must win. Might sound hyperbolic, but it's not. Because it can get ugly, and it can get ugly fast. And those that are optimistic about the Jets, those that feel good about this team, those that think they're going to win... Like, I know somebody that I, look, when he, we all lose when it comes to gambling, but when it comes to futures, this particular friend of mine is very good in that department. Very good. And he bet, and he's also, and this isn't to necessarily sort of take away any kind of credibility, but he's, for full disclosure, he's not a Jet fan. So it's not one of those, well, I just bet my team every year to go over because I want to have a fun bet, which there's nothing wrong with if you do that. He's not a Jet fan, and he bet the over. I disagree with him vehemently, but he bet the over. So he joins the list of people that are optimistic about this football team. I just think it's a head coach quarterback league, and I have serious doubts about the head coach more so with the head coach and the quarterback, but to me, I just, what did you see from Aaron Glenn in year one that makes you think that this guy's going to win 6 or 7 football games this year? I don't see it. Now, and they hired his replacement basically in the offseason in Frank Reich. And, oh, by the way, Aaron Glenn is still trying to figure out how to be a head coach in the league, and you got him essentially running the defense. Instead of hiring Wink Martindale and bringing in a guy that has a ton of experience that you could trust with the defense, and if what Marash reported is accurate, I mean, how tone-deaf could Woody Johnson be? I'm paying you all this money, you're a defensive guy, you run the defense. No, you hired him to be the head coach, not the defensive coordinator. He just had one of the worst seasons ever as a rookie head coach. And you're putting more on his plate? Gee, what could go wrong? What could possibly go wrong? Aaron Glenn has a tough hill to climb. Tough. I don't see him surviving the season. I really don't. I do think there is reason to be optimistic about the Jets down the line. In fact, I have and will continue to lay out my 3 to 5 year positive Tommy plan for the Jets. And I'm not wishing any ill will on any of the fans. No fan base should have to suffer as long as this Jet fan base has suffered. You can't say Jet fan without long and suffering in front of it. But I've brought Jastrzemski on the air before, JJ, obviously a dear friend of mine. We have a mutual friend. Somebody that he's one of Beningo's friends, and you've heard his name on the radio. I'm not going to necessarily say his name, but let's just put it this way. He has the same first name as mine. It just goes through the turnstile every friggin' year, and he always just, he might as well just write JJ a check at the beginning of every year. And just to put it, because I from what I'm being told here, they are either in the works of putting together a bet where the Jets are going to have more wins than the Dolphins. Okay. The Dolphins suck too, I'm not suggesting. But you know what, though? When was the last time the Jets went to Miami and beat them? It's been forever. So I'm not even sure if the Jets are going to win the heads-up matches in those things. So
there's also a bet. I'm on this group chat,
yep,
for the Jets to make the playoffs.
Come on. Come on. And obviously, I'm sure JJ booked that bet, so the JJ would get the money. Is that what happened?
It's like 5-1 or 10-1 odds, but JJ's still getting free money.
Right. It's free money. Look, I get it. Every year you go through the turnstile, some of the Jet fans, and I'm not trying to be condescending. I'm not trying to be rude, but come on, man. It's one of those situations where you got to see it first. You got to see it. And I've gone on the air and said, look, so it seems crazy, but the Jets could be where the Knicks are now. You got to find your Jalen Brunson. You got to find your Leon Rose. There's a lot of, and you got to go through the growing pains. So it's not easy. But the reason I bring that up is because where the Jets are now is where the Knicks used to be, if not worse. And the only reason I say if not worse is because the Jets are, and they're still a huge franchise, but they are the number two franchise in New York. The freaking Knicks were, forget two. They're 1A, 2, 3, 4 as far as basketball franchises in this state. And they play their games at the world's most famous arena. So yeah, and they have every resource to be good, and for years they weren't. In fact, they were hideously bad, as we all know. You don't need a history lesson. So my point is that if the Knicks can turn things around, then anybody can turn things around. I truly believe that. Anybody. Because where the Jets are now, the Knicks used to be. But you know what? Jalen Brunson, thankfully, came along. Leon Rose, thankfully, came along. And brick by brick, Leon Rose built a champion. The right way, by the way. Should be applauded by the league. Instead, they rather put LeBron on a pedestal and Wemby on a pedestal, and instead of putting the team that actually was built the right way in the biggest market that gets the biggest ratings, instead of putting them on the pedestal, let's put LeBron on the pedestal. But I digress. The Jets can turn things around. I don't see it this year. I really don't. And I think it'd get ugly fast. But there you go. A mutual friend of Fleegs and JJ and myself who, God bless him, great guy, but he just goes through the boat. He goes through the turnstile every year. He can't help himself. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. But I am excited for the football season. We'll do some official sort of predictions and things of that nature next week. Actually, you know what? I take that back. We will do it the following week because I will have a show or two before the season kicks off. And by the season kicking off, I mean that Wednesday night game in Australia. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Mike joins us from Westchester. He's on the fan. What's up, Mike?
Hey, Tommy. What's up?
Hey, what's up?
How we doing?
Good. How you doing?
I think you're spot on. I think it's going to get real ugly for the Jets quick. There's no hope for this team.
There's no hope this year. I don't want to blanket statement and say there's no hope for this franchise or point to ownership or point to their ineptitudes all these years and being the worst franchise in all sports. It's more just about this team. I don't believe in the head coach. I just don't think they're going to win this year or be any good. I think Glenn's going to be fired, and then they have all these picks next year. They'll get their quarterback, and then if they find the right guy, they'll be off to the races.
Absolutely. Yeah, Glenn's definitely not the guy. I'm actually a longtime Detroit Lions fan, believe it or not. And he was a good coordinator when he was under Campbell and everything.
Yeah.
But I just don't think he's a head coach. He doesn't, you know, I don't think he's going to get enough out of his players. But Jets, it's going to get ugly quick.
Yeah.
And I don't really see any hope for them. Let's talk Giants, though. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why. Old.
Of course.
I truly believe, listen, like I said, I'm a Lions fan. We actually have an easy schedule this
you have
year.
The, not easy. You have the easiest schedule in the NFL. And that's why a lot of people, Mike, are high on your team because of that easy schedule. They look at them as kind of like last year's Patriots where, and look, you have a ton of talent. Now, losing both coordinators last year definitely hurt you. But this is a team with a great infrastructure. They're great at drafting. They have a very easy schedule. And there's a lot of people, including myself, Mike, that are optimistic about your football team this year.
Yeah, no, I have a lot of expectations. I mean, we've been knocking on the door the last couple of years.
Yep.
But, I mean, now you got another year in with Gibbs. I like the Pacheco sign. I think that, you know.
Yeah, great offensive line. They got a really good team. Now, what is your thought on the Giants?
My thought on the Giants is that I truly believe that they turned the corner now. You got the head coach.
Yep.
You got Dart. He, I believe, is a top talent. I think he definitely could be the best quarterback in their division eventually. I don't think yet. Obviously, you got Dak, Daniels, and Hurts, who's one.
Well, listen, if we're being fair, a full disclosure, and look, I'm a Giant fan, but full disclosure, I mean, Jackson Dart, to me, if you're ranking the quarterbacks, he's got to be fourth. I mean, I'm a big supporter of Jackson Dart. I think he's got a very bright future. But we're talking about Hurts, who won a Super Bowl, could have won two Super Bowls. Dak Prescott, say what you want about him in the playoffs, but he is one of the more successful regular season quarterbacks, and Jaden Daniels in his rookie year went to a championship game. So Jackson Dart's got to prove something in the league first before he can be ranked above any one of those guys.
Totally agree. I'm going to say this. I think the Giants, they're not going to win the division this year.
Mm-hmm.
I have them coming in second. I do think Dallas, for some reason, I just believe that.
Yeah.
Something's telling me that they're going to win the division and could make a deep run. I think Philly drops off and misses the playoffs.
Okay.
And I think Washington is going to be last. I just don't know how Daniels comes back from his injury.
Yeah, Mike, listen, I think the Washington, they are to me the biggest boom or bust team in the NFC East. I could see it going last place or first place. A lot of that has to do with the health of Jaden Daniels, and I just don't know how to figure them out yet. I really, really don't. Like, I'm going to give the respect to Philly. Like, to me, if you said who's going to win the division, I'll say the Eagles. And it pains me to say that. I literally threw up in my mouth when I said it. But it just is what it is. Because they're just a winning organization. And they have the best general manager in football. So they'll find a way, even with A.J. Brown out of there. They'll figure it out. And in many ways, he was a detriment to them by the end. Cowboys, you're not alone, Mike. There are a lot of people that are optimistic about the Cowboys. Boy, those are famous last words, aren't they? And yeah, they have a great offense, but that Pickens quit last year. What's going to stop him from quitting this year? I mean, he literally quit on the team at the end of the year. And yeah, we'll see if the defense is better. Obviously, you know I love Caleb Downs. He's there with them now. Dallas could certainly win the division. It wouldn't stun anybody. It would stun people if they made a deep playoff run just because we haven't seen it in forever. And Dak has a lot of playoff demons, and he's got some brutal playoff losses on his resume. This is what I will say, though. The Giants, you can't say they have the best quarterback in the NFC East. You can't. If you do, we know why you're saying it. But you can't say that. What you can say, though, and I think this is just a fact, the Giants have the best head coach. They have the best head coach. Harbaugh is the best head coach in the NFC East. So that goes a long way for the Giants. And something like that goes a long way quickly. Quickly. Like, head coaches equal good ones, equal wins. And that's why, to me, I have the Giants winning as many games as I have them winning, which is 10. But that's giant expectations. And I admit that is that I've said that, I've been saying that literally since January. You can go through all the tapes, all the videos, all the after hours archives. I have stayed put on that number. Because I look at last year specifically as a season where it was all about the coaching. It was not about the personnel. That may have been the worst or one of the worst coaching staffs in the history of the Giants. It was that bad. Plus the stupidity of this franchise to have freaking Russell Wilson out there for a couple games. Why? I'll never know why they did that. Literally, I have no idea why they did that. You already had Jameis Winston. If you didn't want to start Dart, which obviously I had a sign on my chest for weeks with the start Dart on it, and I wanted Dart starting in week 1, but if you were going to go with the vet in week 1, you had Jameis Winston, who is far and away better than Russell Wilson is at this stage of their careers. And obviously Russell Wilson now doesn't have a career. He's in television. And Winston soon will be in television once he's done playing in 5, 10 years, whatever it is. But last year was all about the ineptitude for the Giants with their coaching staff. I think you immediately get a bump with Harbaugh. And a lot of those losses last year become wins. I mean, you talk about what New England did from the outhouse to the penthouse. Why? Because you have Mike Vrabel. And, of course, the young quarterback. Same thing in Jacksonville. Same thing in Chicago. Young quarterback, new head coach. You have three examples. Even with Jim, John's brother, what he has done with the Chargers. I always want to call him San Diego. Almost called him San Diego there. First of all, I'm not going to go on a big rant on this, but they should have never left San Diego. L.A. doesn't even want one team, let alone two teams. I mean, I don't even think they want sports out in Los Angeles. Give me a break. So I always want to call them the San Diego Chargers because they should be in San Diego still. All right, we got a full bank of calls. We will get to everybody here. Mets, Yankees, Giants, Jets. So a smorgasbord of topics for the final hour of After Hours. If you're on hold, we will get to you. If you want to join the conversation, you can at 888-808-1019. Quickly here, too, before we go to break, a little teaser for next hour. My fan focus is Odell Beckham Jr., who, look, hasn't had the best of training camps, but what did I just tell you a couple minutes ago? Don't go by what you see in the summer. Don't. It means nothing. Including Beckham having a strong week here, and Harbaugh said it was his best week. None of it means, it doesn't matter if he looks awful, it doesn't matter if he looks good. None of it matters. What matters is week 1, and in all likelihood, Beckham now making the team with Austin Hurt out for the year, Calvin Austin. All that matters is when Beckham suits up against a familiar foe in a familiar time slot against the Cowboys. But we'll get more into Odell and the Giants coming up on the other side. And like I said, your phone calls at 888-808-1019. It is Tommy Lugauer. It is Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan.